Welcome to The Sandbox, a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Participate in the podcast and get your level 7 access by calling 304-837-2278 or go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Dave.
Welcome, everybody, to The Sandbox, a Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, where if we reserved the time before the first bell as me time, we'd probably get fired. My name is Mike.
And I'm Dave, and this is show number 75 of The Sandbox, where we'll be discussing season 4, episode 17 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. entitled Identity and Change, which aired April 11th, 2017.
And this episode was written by George Kitson, a name I've not seen before, I don't think, and directed by veteran director Gary A. Brown. And we're still in the swing of things with this third pod. I'm really enjoying where things are going. There's a couple hiccups here and there that we'll definitely discuss as our podcast discussion goes along. But this was a whirlwind episode watching and podcast preparation for us this week, Dave.
Yes, it was. And you'd think being on spring break, we'd have more time, but clearly we both had less time.
Yeah, running all over the place doing stuff. But thank you to those of you who heeded the call and sent in your feedback early. That was very helpful. And we will actually probably have to do the same thing next week. This podcast is still being released at the same time, but we're recording a little earlier than we normally would for real life interference that, you know, happens not too often with Dave and I, thankfully, but it does happen occasionally. But next week, it's happening again. We'll need your feedback in by 7 p.m. Eastern time Wednesday again. But this time it's for a good reason, and that is, I haven't told you, Dave, I am getting called to the 12 Monkeys set again.
Nice.
For season 4, oddly enough, because they're filming season 4 even before season 3 begins airing.
Now, are you flying up or driving?
Yep, they're flying me up there for a very small group of journalists to see them filming season 4. It's kind of the last hurrah for that show. And of course, 12 Monkeys Uncaged is a podcast I do here on Golden Spiral Media alongside S.H.I.E.L.D. So that's very exciting news. And I'll be flying up on Wednesday night and I'll probably end up recording from the hotel.
Okay, well, don't forget to put it in work day.
Yes, exactly. So just a little podcast news as our show news tonight, but we have a great episode to talk about tonight. So let's dive right into our episode discussion.
Well, Mike, you know, just when I think it can't get any better, I'm so immersed in this pod and I don't even know what to say, because on the surface of it, and I think this is going to cause some issues down the road. I mean, it's not really a parallel universe. It's not really an alternate history. I mean, we know what it is, but how do you come to terms and analyze what it is we're seeing? And I finally come to the conclusion, it doesn't matter. It's just so good.
Well, that's true. And we have to remind ourselves of that. But it is wholly unique because you and I are very used to parsing timeline differences and parallel universes. But this is something that you cannot nitpick. And so you just have to sit back and enjoy it.
Right. Now, Chloe Bennett once again does the "We'll Return in a Moment" voiceover leading into the epilogue. And I guess now 2 weeks in a row, it has to mean something. I mean, is it simply because she's essentially leading this op since Coulson's still in his teacher mode?
And I don't know if it has as much to do with her doing the voiceover as him not doing the voiceover, because they don't want us associating that with the Coulson that we knew in the past. They want us to be fully immersed with this new character. And I think it's effective in that sense because he is kind of nerdy, which I really like in this episode especially.
Right. You know, one of the things I did notice as we look at details, and I guess this is still left over from our Lost days when every little thing might mean something.
Yeah.
But the signs on the street, "I'm with Hydra, are you?" "Vigilance against Inhumans." And I guess what it really drove home for me in this episode, not that I didn't think about it before, but clearly Ada sees them, the Inhumans, that is, as a threat to what she's doing. But what is it she's doing? Because this has gone way beyond just protecting the framework, or am I missing something?
No, I think you're totally on. We have to figure out what it is that Ada once, because I would have to disagree with you that the Inhumans are seen as a threat to what she's doing. I think that's incidental to the changes that were made, and she's just having to play along with it. I think the really important bit, oddly enough, when put in contrast to such a crazy world state, is her relationship with Fitz. I think to her, that interaction is what's really important. Although I say that, and you do have to add into the mix the feelings that she seems to be experiencing with regard to the betrayal that she feels Radcliffe bestowed upon her.
Right. And, you know, that kind of leads nicely into what I want to bring up next, which is something we haven't talked about in a while. And I don't think we take it for granted, but the acting in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is so good. And to see now Coulson in a total reversal, he's like a kid in a candy store. Everything he sees, it's like his eyes are just lit up.
Even when he gets handcuffed, it's cool.
Yeah. Simmons continues to rock her field work. And we've talked about how she's become more physical as the season's gone on. But that undying faith she has in Fitz. And again, Elizabeth Henstridge has just been phenomenal in how her character has grown from season one to, you know, here as we approach the end of season four.
And Ian Castiger, right along with her, has been a great actor for this series. And it's gotten to the point where, because she is so good at convincing us of her undying faith in Fitz, we totally were along for the ride and thought that she was correct, that Fitz would never do harm to another human being.
Right.
And so it becomes even more surprising when he does.
Right. And then, of course, we have to ask ourselves, what impact is it going to have that she witnesses Fitz killing Agnes? I mean, I think we all were shocked. I think we all expected him to lower the gun.
I'm thinking even more long term than that. What effect is it going to have on Fitz once he wakes up and realizes what he did?
Right. Which raises a question that I don't think it's true, but I think we'd be remiss to not bring it up. Is Fitz aware of what's going on and simply playing out some longer con against Madame Hydra? Like I said, I don't think so, but
no, I don't think so either. Especially since I don't know if he knows, but I feel like if he helped with the framework, he would know that killing Agnes here in the framework kills her for good. So this was not an idle thing where he's just killing a virtual person there.
Right, right. Now, I'm not sure how it is that Coulson is able to remember Daisy. I mean, we talked about this last week about the stronger the connection between people.
No, I think it's because of the Tahiti Project.
Okay.
His memory was tampered with before, and so it can't be tampered with as easily. And so there's remnants that the framework couldn't get rid of.
Okay. And Daisy does bring up the Tahiti Project there briefly, because he clearly believes her tale of the framework. And I guess I'm not sure who initiated the apprehension of Coulson. In other words, his view of Hydra as being this subversive unit. I mean, because clearly that's not something that Ada would have programmed.
No, totally initiated by his own brain, I think. Okay. It's rebelling against the framework.
Okay, taking the remnants that, as you mentioned, and you know, weaving them into something else that, I mean, certainly what he sees going on around him.
Well, when he brings up things like the blue soap and obviously those are remnants of the blue Tahiti treatment and the TH3, I can't remember what it's called anymore. GH325, I think, or something like that was blue as well. So I think it starts to get the flavor of a conspiracy theorist, but underneath all of that weirdness is the truth.
Right. And you say weirdness, then I'm sitting here trying to figure out what's going on with Ada and Ward. For instance, we assume Ada, and I think rightly so, is controlling virtually everything we see. Why doesn't Ward just shoot her?
Yeah.
When he's got his sniper's rifle. So
why is he fixating on the doctor?
Right.
Because he's sort of bought into the resistance idea, but he certainly has not bought into the alternate reality scenario.
Right. And what is Project Looking Glass? Clearly an allusion to the Lewis Carroll story.
Yeah. And we're going to have to parse that a little bit more when we get to that part of the plot, because that is a very curious thing to me. Why would they be carrying on a Project Looking Glass if Ada has control of the framework with the help from the superior back in the real world. That I do not get.
Right. Where's Walter Bishop when we need him?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And then once they're clear of the framework, will any of them remember what went on while they were inside?
I'm predicting yes.
Okay. And I think you almost have to have that. I mean, maybe they don't remember every detail, but they have to remember something. But then that leaves us with Gemma and Fitz. I mean, is she going to fear Fitz, or is she still going to hold to that I know Fitz, that was not my Fitz, yet she saw it?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be without any effect, but I do think they can overcome it.
Right. Well, I think maybe the biggest problem is going to be him overcoming it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
And maybe distancing himself from her because he doesn't feel that he's worthy of her, something along those lines. Perhaps most importantly, and we talked a couple of weeks ago about how great it is to have Grant Ward back in the show and what a great actor Brett Dalton is. How's the team going to look at Grant Ward? I mean, they remember him before. This is like, as we said, the fourth incarnation of Grant Ward we've seen.
I don't know that it's going to have too much of an effect, but that's a good question, especially if they're able to get him out of there somehow and put him in an LMD, because it does have some repercussions, at least on their memory of him.
Right. And I think, as you just said, and I agree, that if they don't have them remember what happened, then what's the point of spending a whole third of the season inside?
There's got to be consequences.
Right. And talking about consequences, I think the most significant and severe are going to affect Melinda May, because she's got to deal with the two sides of Bahrain, and it's a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, either way, she turns out like a emotionless brute, almost.
Right. And I mean, we can say that this side is worse, you know, the side that, you know, she saves the girl, but yet the girl comes back and goes on a murderous rampage, and then she has to live with that. But I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's going to be interesting to see, because she's been out of commission for so long now because of the whole LMD May business, where it really wasn't her, that there's a lot of consequences, not just this, but also the whole thing with her relationship with Coulson that didn't really happen. So May's got a lot of fallout to deal with.
Yeah. Now, you know, as we get into the episode, one of the things that struck me tonight that really hasn't before is the number of lines in a scene that would make a great chapter title. And in this opening scene, you're going to need a substitute.
Yeah.
We're in Coulson's classroom. Daisy explains the framework to him, who surprisingly believes everything she tells him. You know, we talked a little bit about that a couple minutes ago. And he mentions, you know, his distrust of Hydra, the lies surrounding the Cambridge Institute. And then he goes off about the blue soap as a mind control device, that he makes his own soap. But while they're in there, Daisy gets a call from Ward that Hydra's coming for Coulson. But the power of that scene is that not only does he believe what she's telling him, but it's like that relief that, as he says, I'm not crazy.
Right. That's got to be a big thing for him. He's obviously been collecting a lot of articles, which end up being helpful in tracking down Radcliffe at the very least. So he's not exactly back to his old self, but he is back to being part of the team. And that was kind of a small relief.
All right. Well, why don't we tackle the first story? There are basically only two, but the first one, the mission to find Radcliffe. And thank goodness for Grant Ward.
Another chapter title.
Right. So, you know, there are some great scenes in this, not the least of which is when Coulson comes face to face with the Patriot. But we'll get to that in a second. So Daisy brings Coulson back to meet up with Simmons, and his exuberant innocence is just totally endearing.
He's kind of acting like a nerdy wannabe S.H.I.E.L.D. agent kind of guy, which I like. It's kind of like the viewers of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., kind of like their proxy.
And what I also like is that he willingly goes on this mission, untrained, unprepared, mm-hmm. yet willing to risk his life. And it's certainly something that we've seen him have to come to terms with as the mission leader in the real world, where he has people out there that really aren't out there, but there really is no choice. So it was a nice reversal there.
Yes. He was being a field agent again.
Right. Now, we talked last week about what a great job they did with Simmons' makeup. She looks decidedly alive this week.
Yes, thank goodness.
So I'm not sure what that's all about, but whatever.
She was only mostly dead.
yeah. But she figures that if Daisy got through to Coulson, surely she can get through to Fitz. And I think that's, again, one of the most powerful aspects of this episode is that we watch her on a number of occasions with that mindset. And while Daisy doesn't tell her no, she plants the seeds of the reality of the situation is that this is not the Fitz that you think it is. And she's clearly right.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely a difference of viewpoint between Daisy and Simmons that has to be reconciled. And I think it does to a certain extent get reconciled in this episode, but clearly they have different ways of viewing how to approach the ones they're trying to rescue.
Right. And you wonder, is this setting up a scene later in the season, you know, not necessarily this episode, where Simmons is going to engage in some sort of foolish act where she trusts Fitz to do something? Then, of course, the consequences are negative. But again, getting back to Ada as puppet master, why would Ada allow Fitz to crack, so to speak?
I don't know that she has that level of control.
Okay.
I think she has to let especially the inhabited avatars to do what they will, but she has more control over the world itself maybe, and tries to use it to manipulate them into certain circumstances. But yeah, I don't think she can keep him from cracking.
Okay. I mean, we certainly understand, as you point out, the fact that Coulson has gone through the Tahiti program as to why he's able to come back, whereas the others haven't. So it'll be interesting to see how all this plays out. All right. So the next scene, we see Daisy and Ward, and as she says, the soap made me do it.
Chapter 3 or whatever. Yeah.
And of course, he has no idea what she's talking about. And she doesn't explain, but she's breaking into Madam Hydra's restricted files, which, again, it's always nice to see Sky in hacking mode. We don't get to see that as often anymore.
And plus, we don't know how much Sky has been doing that as an avatar. You know, was she doing that kind of thing? And is Ward going, where the hell did you get the ability to hack into the highest level security of Hydra?
Right. But she's looking for files on Holden Radcliffe because Coulson, you know, once she mentions the name, oh, I cut an article out, and he's got his file folders conveniently right there. and that Radcliffe might be the key, which obviously we know he is, as does Daisy. So, you know, at this point, Daisy and Ward are leaving the Triskelion, but May stops them, telling Daisy she needs to come with her. And again, that was a cool scene because our first reaction is, oh, crap, May's on to her. But then we're thinking like, well, maybe not. This is just May's new gruff exterior, even gruffer than we're used to.
Yeah, which is interesting because we're suspicious, then we're not suspicious. And then when May's intent becomes clear, it really kind of puts it on its head once more. So, yeah, they do go back and forth quite a bit as to what we expect of May.
Yep. All right. Chapter 4. I'm Jeffrey Mace. Welcome to S.H.I.E.L.D.
This is so weird that we're going to talk about Jeffrey Mace and we have not even mentioned him. We were talking last week. So we don't know what's going on with Mac, but here's the story of everyone else. We didn't even mention Director Mace, and what a surprise it was to see him because I was not even thinking about what he might be up to.
Now, were you happy to see him in uniform or would you have preferred the suit?
Well, I liked it. I don't know that I can explain it. Once again, we're having to chalk this up to the framework's difference than a parallel timeline might be, because why would he have the suit? Why would he be in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D. if not for all this other stuff? But you just kind of have to skip over that and just accept it.
Right. Well, we've been talking about regrets the last few weeks, so maybe this was Coulson's wish.
But what would Mace's regret be? Because you can't figure it out from this.
No, I'm saying forget regrets. This was Coulson's wish. He's at S.H.I.E.L.D. So what would I wish for to see the Patriot in the Patriot uniform?
Yeah, he's very excited, like a little comic book nerd.
All right. Well, also nice little Billy Koenig shout out that he provided the locale of the HQ 70 years after World War II. So that was nice.
Very similar to his sacrifice that he gave to steer them in that direction in the real world.
Yeah. Ward shows up as Mace explains about providing sanctuary for Inhumans and potential Inhumans. And of course, the two know each other and seemingly on good terms, which still confuses Sky. Should we call her Sky or Daisy? I think we talked about this last week.
Yeah, I don't know. It depends on the context, I think.
I guess you're
right.
We'll
just go back and forth.
Yeah, so at this point, she's, I guess, Sky. Because
yeah.
All right, Chapter 5. I can pilot and supervise, Ward tells Mace. You know, now that they've got the coordinates and they know Radcliffe's location, which is off the coast of Bermuda. And on the one hand, my first reaction was, whoa, wait a minute. Are we going to go down the Bermuda Triangle route? And I'm glad they didn't.
I'm kind of wondering if this is a place that Radcliffe had set aside for himself and felt like he was going to live in the lap of luxury as opposed to a gilded prison, as he puts it, because it does seem like it's a retreat away from the fake world that he's built.
Well, that's true. And as we said, you know, the team is very small because Mace doesn't want to allocate any manpower because he's short on manpower.
I'm surprised they let him use the Quinjet, honestly.
I know, because it's not as if the hangar was full of Quinjets, which was also a great non-scene, so to speak.
Yeah, they say, wouldn't it be great if we had like rows upon rows of Quinjets? And I like also how Simmons even tells Coulson, the Zephyr would blow your mind or something to that effect.
Yeah. All right. Chapter, I don't know, is this 6?
I think so.
I'd die for her, Ward tells Simmons as he flies the jet.
Yes.
And he, of course, is referring to Sky, who he's left behind. And we talked about the acting of Elizabeth Henstridge earlier in the podcast. And here again, that look on her face, she doesn't know what to think.
She's kind of disgusted, but at the same time intrigued.
Yes. And I don't think you can, under any circumstance, say that she's glad to hear that, because this is Grant Ward, who, okay, great, he's on our side, but only because he's betraying the side that thinks he's working for him.
But at the same time, does she read too much into what the framework might interpret as the intentions of Grant Ward with regard to Sky, no matter what the world contains? Because I think that would be the one moment for pause, is perhaps we've not given him enough credit for his devotion to Sky.
Right. Now, one of the things that struck me is that he's clearly afraid of May and Fitz, and of course, rightly so. And we know he knows that Sky has inhuman capabilities, right? He's surprised that she knows she's inhuman, but we also know, as does she, that her powers don't work here.
Right. She has not gone through Terrigenesis. So it's just a potential thing. And I think a lot of the people that are there in the S.H.I.E.L.D. compound have not been activated. They just have the genetic markers.
Right. Okay. And then, do we need to have a guessing game, a poll of some sort, to figure out who Coulson's ex-wife is?
Oh, yeah, because I immediately thought of the cello woman, but he had an article about the cellist performing and little questions in the margin. Do I know her? Back in the previous episode. So,
oh, I missed that.
It could be, what's her face? I'm forgetting her name now. The poor woman that was shot in the head by Ward.
Oh, right. Yes. Yes. All right. Well, appropriately enough, Chapter 7, just try not to get yourself killed.
Okay. Who says that one again? I forget.
I think it's
Ward maybe says that to Coulson. Because there was a lot of irony in the way that Ward treated Coulson, his old boss, kind of dismissive of him. And it's not until Simmons gets him a gun that he even is able to have that.
Right. And, you know, this is supposed to be a simple extraction of Radcliffe. But once they get there, Radcliffe recognizes what's going on. And the first thing he tells him is that there's no escape from the framework, which obviously, as the viewer, there's going to be a way. We know.
Okay. Eventually.
eventually. But then he goes on with that little monologue about the framework meant to be a paradise and that you know, my intentions were pure. And then they see Agnes walk by, and Radcliffe, you know, further explains what it is he's done. And of course, we know all of that, you know, about her body being buried at sea.
Well, I'm kind of curious as to whether or not something in Ada's programming precluded her from erasing Radcliffe's memory, because that was a strange thing that he remembered the world as it was and no one else did by virtue of his regret not being removed, I guess. But then why does Agnes not know?
Okay. And does Ada want Radcliffe to forget everything in the past? I mean, on the one hand,
I think she would rather he did.
Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, we have that scene where she talks about having been a slave.
Right. I think it's basically something she can't do because of her programming rather than something that she chose not to do.
Right. Now, again, we mentioned last week about the fate of real Radcliffe, and he points out that Ada killed him and that he's the same as Agnes.
Right. That's all they have is the framework now.
Right. And as I said, he insists he meant only to do good. And of course, yeah, I mean, we get that. And again, it's another example of the scientist not really seeing the consequences of his or her invention or, you know,
of his knowledge, his whatever knowledge he's gained. Yeah. But I think the more intriguing thing, rather than just listening to his excuses all over again, is the fact that he does share with Simmons that small detail of the location of the drilling platform in the Baltic where the Russian has, quote, the others, meaning, of course, the friends that they're trying to rescue. Now, do they have to travel to this location in the framework in order to get to that? I mean, how is the analog going to be put into play for them to wake up the others? Is there going to be something in the framework that they can get to if they go to that exact location?
Right. I mean, do Simmons and Daisy have to, you know, sign out, so to speak?
Yeah.
And do what they tried to do. I mean, we're assuming they can't, because right, if they'd been able to, they'd have already done it.
They're going to go to this oil platform and they're going to figure out some technical mumbo jumbo to explain away how they do it. But yeah, it might take a lot more episodes to do that, but I'm very interested to see how the location that they are given here in the framework will come into play.
Yeah. Now, great scene when Ada's Quinjet appears, lands, and then everybody's in black. Ada, Fitz, the team stride out.
It looks like, you know how Coulson says something about, I'm really digging the Rebel Alliance vibe that you've got going on down here?
Yeah.
Well, this looked like the Empire, like Darth Vader marching off of his, you know, ship. I mean, it totally looked like that. That's a, yeah, great entrance, as it were.
Yeah, and there were a lot of little references, allusions, some of them current political stuff that we'll
yes,
just let slide.
I know the one you mean, yes.
And
let's make our society great again.
Yes. But then she says, don't use my words or my bloody programming against me. And the relationship between Ada and Fitz has always been an interesting one.
Yeah.
Because it's clear, at least to me, that she's in love with him.
Yeah. Or that she's trying it out. Because I still don't know how much she can do on her own. Because that was her quest at the end of the second pod. How much progress has she made on that quest is my question.
Right. But in a sense, she states it pretty plainly, pretty succinctly. You know, a storyline we've seen many times before, the created rebelling against its creator. But in this case, why? I mean, as we said a few minutes ago, what is she after? Because it's way beyond just protecting the framework. Is she jealous of something? Is she jealous that she was a slave?
Right. And what does the Looking Glass project have to do with it? That's my main thing, is why would she be seeking to give a glimpse of this other world to the people who she's trying to make forget about it?
Right. I mean, because she speaks about how degrading her life was, and she mentions the, I think it was Radcliffe calls her Ada. And this is, I believe, the first time that we hear about this, that she snaps and tells us that Ada is an acronym.
Right. And the A stands for artificial, and that's not cool.
And we can speculate that the I is for intelligence or intelligent.
I think he did say it at some point. It might have been the season finale of season three, but yeah, he did say what it stood for at some point.
Okay. Well, she's just gotten the words degrading out of her mouth, and then Agnes walks in, clearly confused, because here's this woman, albeit a bit hotter than I am, but looks just like me.
That's just the fashion choices.
Yes. So that was pretty poignant. And then that line, I know everything I need to know, comes from Grant Ward, you know, as they're watching from the trees. Fitz verbalizing that Ada was right, that they would be coming for us. So, you know, we get into this whole idea about the two universes, if you will. I don't know what else we want to call them, the two realities, maybe.
Yeah.
But that they were operating under the assumption that travel between the two was not possible.
Right. And I think that's probably what the higher ups think about it with regard to whatever quest Ada has them on, because Fitz knows about it clearly and May knows about it. But what do they think of it? What is the reality to them, and what danger does it pose to their supposed reality?
And does Ada really believe that Radcliffe meant to replace her with Agnes? I guess.
Because it seems like the other way around almost.
Right. You would think. So while all this is going on, and really a tense scene, and this is clearly not the Fitz that we know, yet Simmons still believes this is the man she loves, the man that loves her. He'd never do anything to harm Agnes. Wart's not so sure, and he's got his sniper rifle ready, zeroing in on Fitz. And we said before, why doesn't he just take out Ada? But you know, Simmons pleading with Ward, don't shoot him. I love him. You know, it's not what he thinks it is. I was surprised on one level that Ward backed off.
Yeah, it is a little bit curious, but he seems to be a compassionate guy in this version of things. And it really isn't until Simmons shouts out in horror at what Fitz has done. And of course, Fitz does get that glimpse. And you could see that there's something going on, not just here when he sees her in person, but earlier when he's looking at her file, where there's some glimpse of recognition. It's not just a stone cold look. And that's maybe where you're getting those suspicions that he's playing a long con, because he does seem to know Simmons somehow. But even then, Ward just shoots all the guards and still doesn't take out Fitz. I thought that was pretty telling as well.
Yeah. So again, I'm not sure what to make of that. But, you know, we talked before about, and I want to get you to clarify something for me, because I'm still, as always, confused about something. If you die in the framework, you die in real life.
Right. That's true. Yeah. We didn't have the discussion. Since we're not at work, we can't have our pre-podcast discussion.
Right. So these are the people that are on the oil rig with the Russian. So they're, it refers to those people.
Well, those people are the asleep Jeffrey Mace and Fitz and all the other people that are in the framework. That's right. Where they are on that oil platform.
Yeah. Right. So if they die in the framework, they die in real life. But Simmons and Sky, if they die in the framework, do they necessarily die in real life?
I think they did say something to that effect to Yo-Yo when they went in at the end of the second pod. Yes.
Okay. Now, the other thing that, as we're kind of speculating about, is Fitz beginning to crack, which I think is probably more the case than the long con.
Yeah.
He tells Radcliffe, you act like you know me. And now it comes down to Radcliffe pleading versus Ada's insistence that Radcliffe's lying. Fitz has got the gun. And the next thing you know, I think we all assumed he would lower the gun and everything would be fine, but he puts the bullet in Agnes's chest.
To what end, even?
Yeah, to what end? Is that just who he is? Is he just evil Fitz?
Right, because it seems like now maybe something's messing with his mind, where he's realizing something's not up, and that kind of confusion is what caused him to shoot. But he seems to indicate that, you don't know me at all, when he turns to the camera. So I do think there's definitely some evil intent going on that we haven't really begun to touch on. And it might be him cracking a little bit, and will they be able to rescue him, and how will he feel when he comes out of it? That's always big. But I have to say, the other thing I really liked about this sequence that starts with Fitz putting a bullet in Agnes is that Coulson is shooting. Did you notice this? He's not a meek teacher who's been given a gun and can't figure out how to turn the safety off.
Yeah.
He's standing in front of Simmons.
I know.
And saying, let's move away. Let's go. That I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah. And then the last scene of this story arc, we're back at SHIELD HQ, and Mace is understandably angry that Simmons stopped Ward from taking the shot on Fitz. And then the agents bring in Mac, who tells them about what happened with Daisy and to atone for his sin to giving into Hydra. He's here to help. And I'm thinking, like, okay, how ironic. Mace is angry that Simmons got in the way of what Ward's orders were. And then as we transition into the other story arc, which features Mac and his daughter Hope, his little mantra, follow the rules, keep your head down. I'm thinking, like, dude, you never follow the rules.
I know. And not only that, it's definitely a departure for him in not following the rules. It's also a departure on him saying the Inhumans don't deserve this. And, you know, coming springing to the defense of Inhumans is very ironic as well.
So, all right. So the second story arc, we're kind of behind the scenes in the Hydraverse. And Mac is just one of those, I don't want to say polarizing characters, because that's far harsher than is accurate. But personally, I've certainly vacillated a lot with his character, and mostly for his propensity to ignore the rules,
right,
which you really can't have in a military type setting. But it's nice to see him with Hope, because, you know, we know that's been a huge part of really tearing this man apart inside.
Well, it's interesting that of all the regrets that Ada removed, this one seems to be the most effective, let's say. I mean, we still don't know what Mace's was, but I think this was definitely the end result that we would expect from something that came from the team that were good people at heart.
Yeah. Now, this scene, I don't know, I'm a little ambivalent about it, because on the one hand, I really like the fact that she's mechanical, like her dad. I like the fact that they're using the drones, so there's that connection to Fitz. But there was something about the actor playing Hope that I just didn't really see a connection between the two of them that really rang true for me. And then on the other hand, I thought, well, maybe that's what they were going for, because we are in the framework, and that this is a computer simulation and not two people. So
it's not based on a real person like Grant Ward is.
Right.
It's just a complete fabrication.
Right. So I'm just going to let that slide. I love the fact that she scavenges parts from a crashed Hydra drone, brings it back. You know, so I love all that. But then Mac has to come in. You got to follow the rules. I'm like, all right, dude, whatever.
Yeah. Do you not see the irony of this?
Right.
But I did like that it was instrumental in bringing this huge misdirect that not only made it seem like they were going to get, you know, rounded up during a random check at a bus stop where Mac, you know, is very self-sacrificing. He's going to take the fall for her. But it also makes us think things are a certain way when May puts him into an interrogation room, because we just basically have no idea what to expect. Are they going to get rounded up? Are they going to be safe? If they are rounded up, why? And what's going to happen to them? Anyone who said they predicted that ending is lying through their teeth.
Right. And obviously Daisy knows him, but he doesn't know her. And you know, we'll talk about it in a few minutes. The scene where it does appear as if he's snapping out of it, but of course that wasn't the truth. But we've got another scene in the office with Ada and Fitz, and clearly something's bothering her about the subversive. And as he says, why won't you let me help you? And I'm thinking, like, well, Fitz, it's like this. I'm not letting you anywhere near Gemma Simmons.
Yeah, she's trying to maybe test his devotion to her. And I think she's satisfied with the way he answers her questions. But I do have to wonder if this is just all some grand experiment for her to see the level of devotion she can elicit in a human being where she's just trying out emotions as a artificial intelligence.
Right. And then, of course, that line that we've heard before, that I'd cross the universe.
Oh, yes.
For you. He tells Ada, although he calls her Ophelia.
Yes. Interesting choice of name.
Right. And while, as we mentioned at the top of the show, both of us were pretty darn busy today. But, you know, having taught Hamlet, I mean, obviously, Ophelia is perhaps best known as Hamlet's girlfriend. And in that play, I mean, she really kind of had to struggle between two personas, if you will, because on the one hand, her father saw her, as I guess did the men of the time, as this pure young woman, whereas, you know, on the other hand, she really had this emotional attachment to Hamlet. She, you know, trying to straddle those two worlds. And of course, in the end, it drives her mad.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, these writers of these shows don't throw details like this in for nothing, or
they might, because I almost hate to destroy your illusion because it's wonderful. But I'm just looking up on Wikipedia. Ophelia Sarkissian is Madame Hydra's alter ego name that they came up with in the comics. But I still like the Shakespearean.
I don't accept that
parallel.
Consider the threat eliminated.
Oh, that's great.
All right. Well, finally, she shows Fitz the tablet with Simmons on it. But when she explains that she's threatening her, Fitz does as I think she hoped or expected, that he'll get the team on it. And as I said, tells her that the threat will be eliminated. And then lethal force is authorized if necessary. Like, whoa, Fitz.
Right. What the heck do they think these guys are up to? I mean, we know that Ada knows what they're up to, yeah, and that they need to be taken out. But what have they been told? Because as everyone keeps saying, boy, this is a lot of mobilization for one suspect.
Yeah. And why does Sky think May isn't like everybody else?
Yeah. She almost keeps trying to bring her back to her real self. She just won't give up on that.
Right. All right. Well, May's team with Sky, and this was interesting to watch Sky, because on the one hand, she's horrified, but really can't do anything. They break into Mac's house, take his daughter, who apparently is the subversive they were after, over the drone.
No, that's the thing. This was entirely, and of course, this comes out after a while, but it does raise the question, what the heck is going on here? And they have that drone as the red herring, but it's all just Ada telling them to round him up and entrap Daisy/Sky into admitting that she's not of this world.
Okay. Wow. Pretty elaborate, but yeah. I guess you're right. And in fact, you know, when Mac's being questioned, you know, about Hope, just because she's a kid doesn't mean she's innocent. And I'm wondering, okay, is that sort of a oblique reference to Bahrain, just because she's a kid? And that was the mistake that May made the first time and the second time.
That could be, although that's a bit of an oblique reference, but yeah, but I like the parallel.
Okay. Now, the other thing that I noticed finally is that Madame Hydra, aka Ada, always calls him Leopold.
Well, she did in the real world too.
Yeah. So I find that interesting. Again, probably means very little, if anything, but we do find out that Simmons was actually killed in the SHIELD Academy incident. And I think, didn't somebody use the word assassinated?
Well, or I think Simmons herself used that when she saw that there were two bullet holes in her sweater.
Okay. But at this point, Ada raises the possibility that Simmons has crossed over, which Fitz thought was impossible. And cue Walter Bishop. Come on down, Walter.
Red verse.
Exactly. And that, you know, the Project Looking Glass, which I'm a little rusty on my Lewis Carroll, but, you know, obviously, again, just like in Fringe, he had a literal looking glass that he could go into the parallel universe in that case.
And it's very similar to Fringe because one universe is trying to prevent the other one from destroying it.
Right, exactly. Trying to stop the people from that world who want to destroy what we've built. So, you know, and then over there, she brings in the whole alternate history idea that Hydra lost the war She was treated as a slave, less than human. And again, I'm thinking like, okay, versus inhumans who are more than human. And that's where, I guess, where I go back to what I said earlier about her perceiving inhumans as a threat.
Well, that could be, yeah, maybe it's because she was treated as less than human when there were actual less than human people out there that should have been treated that way. And so, but I think that ascribes to her way too many human emotions. So that's why I have trouble with it.
Okay. And then of course, you know, we have that scene where Fitz is kind of staring and that there seems to perhaps be some recognition about who Simmons really is to him. And
yeah, I'm convinced that he is having glimmers of remembrance.
And I'm going to go and say that with five episodes to go, not yet.
No. Right. Good guess.
Yeah. All right. So we see Skye with Hope. She reiterates that my dad follows the rules. And you know, as you said, you got May interrogating Mac. And then they do the reversal. And it's all, as you said, a setup to get Daisy to admit who she is, where she's from. And Mac plays along. But again, why wouldn't he? So we can't blame Mac at all. I mean, I think for all his faults, Mac that we see in this universe, you know, is a great dad. I mean, everything's about protecting his child.
Right. Which is what makes it surprising that when May says, Hydra thanks you for your service, and he's forced to say, Hail Hydra, I think he's realizing at that moment that keeping your head down and trying to stay out of trouble is not enough, because in the end, you're basically being complicit with those who are putting everyone down.
Right. And then when we see Daisy taken into custody and just literally beaten by her captors, it's really sickening.
Well, it's even more sickening what happens next in the epilogue.
Yeah.
I just can't believe Fitz shooting Agnes is one thing, but for him to be interrogating Radcliffe and being so cold towards Daisy, like, what is the threat that Ada has put forth as part of Project Looking Glass? He says he doesn't know that it was possible for anyone to cross over. Is he worried that she is actively trying to destroy the world because she's from this other reality?
Yeah, I don't know. And that's part of the beauty of this pod.
Yeah, we don't know where it's going.
And fortunately, we have five episodes left, so there should be some closure, you would think.
Right. But it's very unpredictable in a good way. And I think that's a testament to how different these three storylines have been in season four, where it's almost like three different seasons.
Right. Especially since we don't know yet whether we're going to get a season five.
That's right.
So, all right. You mentioned the epilogue, beaten and bloodied. Skye is alone in this large, empty room. I mean, we've certainly seen, you know, beaten prisoners in an interrogation room, but they're always much smaller. So the sheer size of this room was striking. We can hear briefly somebody being tortured in another room.
That's Radcliffe.
Oh, okay. And then Fitz comes in and he's not wearing a jacket, which, you know, you almost half expected him to start rolling up his sleeves and that he was going to play the role of the torturer. And he tells her that he knows she's a potential inhuman and we've got plenty of ways of making you talk. And she tells him he really doesn't want to torture me. And then he says, yeah, I do.
Yeah. And so now we're starting to wonder. We just saw him shoot Agnes. Were we naive, as Simmons was, to believe that this could be our Fitz? Is there something that we just don't know about him? Perhaps some influence from his ne'er-do-well father that's keeping him as this Dr. Mengele-like character?
Yeah, and we did have that little tidbit mention of something his father said, so
what was that? Yeah. But yeah, it's going to probably be a similar discussion each week until we start to get some answers. And I like that, the fact that we can continue to come back to different pieces that we've discussed about each different character and discuss what progress has been made, because that shows a cohesive arc across the entire pod. So do you like how we sort of became comfortable calling it pods?
I do.
We were making fun of it at first. But one thing that has returned also that we're very happy about is Faith's Coulsass report. There were some lines that came through contact with Coulson that maybe were not as sassy as we're used to hearing from Coulson, but it did lighten the mood a little bit and bring back some of that lightheartedness. So let's go ahead and hear what Faith came up with in the Coalsass report.
Hello, everyone. Did you miss me? Welcome back to the Coalsass report. It's been so long, and even though I have a cold, I wasn't going to miss this week. This episode was less sass and more just funny, unaware Coulson moments, but I still think that counts. But before I share this week's contenders, here's the winner from episode 14, the one that gave us plenty of Coalsass. I have game.
You have game.
I have what some people refer to in certain parts of the world as game.
It's cute that you think that.
And now for this week's contenders. Number one, this is my time.
Hey, Mr. Coulson, my homework was done, I swear. But then my dad made me...
Amy, we've been over this. Until first bell, this is my time.
Right? Okay, geez, sorry.
Number two, I make my own soap now.
I would have figured it out a long time ago if it wasn't for the mind control soap.
Yeah. Wait, what?
That blue soap everyone uses? Hydra loads it up with chemicals. It seeps into our bloodstream and plants false memories into our brains. They want us to believe this is a magical place. But don't worry, I'm clear. I make my own soap now.
Number three, my bad.
Oh, hi. It's me again, Phil Coulson. I called Hydra on you. My bad.
Water under the proverbial bridge.
Number four, it's quaint.
You are not crazy.
I live alone and make my own soap.
It's quaint. Hipster, even.
That's not how my ex-wife saw it.
And number five, not cool, bro.
Don't forget about implanting bogus memories and let me think I'm off my gourd. Not cool, bro.
Did I miss your favorite moment? Hopefully not. If you catch any awesome sassy moments next week, hopefully there will be some, hit me up on Twitter at FBMC with the hashtag Coalsass. To vote for this week's contenders, please visit facebook.com/groups/agentsofshieldgsm. Remember to only vote for one. While you do that, I'm going to make sure I have all of my identification in order. Have a great week, everybody.
All right, some great choices. Thank you very much, Faith, for doing that for us. Once again, we've missed you the past two podcasts stretching over several weeks, so it's great to hear you back again. And it's also great to hear from our listener feedback. And we've got some of our regular contributors who have some thoughts on this week's episode. And we'll start with Skimmins. She says, as teachers, what did you think of Coulson's line, before first bell, this is my time? It was pretty ridiculous.
Given that we are ordered, although some of us don't follow orders very well, that we're supposed to be out in the hall greeting our students.
Yes. Welcoming them into the classroom and helping them. But yeah, that was kind of funny. Clark Gregg's delivery was hilarious, genuine, and perfect. I love Fitz showed no emotional differences to Gemma's picture. It really makes the drama for the arc feel longer lasting than if he had shown recognition like Coulson did seeing Daisy. I don't know. Maybe we differ from Skimmins on this. I think I did see a glimmer of something, but I'm not sure. He feels like a genuine second boss in a video game this way. Also, I can't lie, my Skimmins heart did go, it would have affected Daisy in that moment. Ha! Gemma's and Ward's banter scenes never disappoint. Some nice scenes with Gemma and Coulson as well. I can believe May would tell Mac Daisy is S.H.I.E.L.D. to try and get a response from her, but how did she know her name was now Daisy? Did Ada tell her? Yeah, I think that's her source there, the Project Looking Glass. Not cool, bro. Some good Coalsass bits in this episode. A very stormtrooper-esque entrance for Ada and Fitz on the island. Ah, great. Same thing I thought. Her power walk skills were on point with the perfect amount of anger and in-charge strut. A great speech by Ada about what it was like for her being called artificial and treated as a thing. While I'm bummed we lost Agnes, I love Fitz shot her because, again, it really keeps the drama going. That's a boss villain level move for sure. Might Fitz be the boss villain they have to defeat to get out of the framework, with Ada actually the secondary level villain because she can't do things without Fitz? Might Fitz's darkness feed into the stuff with his father in a plot for next season once they're out of the framework? That could be. I could see that happening. It would be a good continuation of this story, but also allow the plot point to be its own story for a section of the new season. Again, some great acting in this episode by the cast. Ian's and Mallory's layered dynamic was great to see. You couldn't tell how much was Ada influenced and how much was genuine Fitz picking the scenarios over reality. I know Gemma kept saying that this couldn't be their Fitz because of his evilness, but given the framework has them brain mapped and clearly this darkness is a part of Fitz, the question is he picking this reality to fight so hard for instead of showing signs of fighting back?
Yeah, you know, that's good because, I mean, that's like the ancient Greeks, I mean, you know, that man has this darkness in his soul and then that the majority of the time we keep it in check so that it's there. And so, yeah, that's a cool, I like that theory.
And of course, it's been implied in the previous episode that Simmons is partly what kept Fitz in check. So yeah, this might have a seed of truth in it. Coulson had memory flashes because of Tahiti. May fixed Bahrain, but is still miserable, arguably because Hydra is now in control because of that option. Mac did the right thing by going to S.H.I.E.L.D. in the end, and Mace is leading the rebellion, but Fitz shows no sign of his real-world self. Why does he like the framework better than reality? Very good question. Are some of these actions subconscious on overload due to the world they're in, such as in reality, Fitz wouldn't hurt Daisy like Doctor is going to, but subconsciously he would do anything to protect Ada, thus in the framework his avatar is doing just that? He likes being the hero, so he gets to be Ada's hero in this world. Ian is definitely doing a great job as a villain in these latest episodes. It makes me wonder how the others would play evil versions of their characters. A good episode. And yeah, Skimmins, this was a great feedback because I do think you're zeroing in on the correct character here in Fitz to really try and analyze what's going on. That, just as we did, I think.
Yep. All right. Well, Peter also checked in again this week and says, I wasn't sure if the final arc of the season was going to take place all in the framework, but after these two episodes upon the mid-season return, I don't mind at all. The world they've created in the framework is deeply layered and vastly different from our own. Even the bluish hue that the show is shot in gives us that feeling of a cold, dark, and more sinister world. My favorite parts so far are the different twists on all our main characters. Seeing Grant Ward being genuinely heroic is actually pretty weird.
Yeah.
We've seen his dark side for so long, it's hard to imagine he could be a good person. Fitz's is another breakout character in this new reality. His scary, sadistic tendencies rival that of Ada in the real world. And my hope is that he comes to his senses soon before doing something terrible to Daisy. This season has been spectacular, and I'm really enjoying the three major story arcs. It's definitely like having three mini-seasons wrapped up in one. Many other shows can learn a thing or two about how to do a full 22-episode season from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Looking forward to next week. Peter, amen about other shows learning something.
Yeah, I really like it. It's like accelerated season two, season three, season four, season five. I mean, technically, we should be up to, let's see, season six, this would be this last pod. So, but I still hope we get another season in order to maybe try another experiment or do the same thing again. All right, we heard from Taltos, who says, why is Daisy still treating May like her real-world counterpart? I think you said that too, Dave. Daisy asking her, did you know about this in regards to Fitz's Simmons is a subversive announcement, is likely what raised May's suspicions. At least Simmons seemed better at staying inconspicuous in this episode, even hushing Coulson for talking about the world being fake. How did May know that Skye's other name was Daisy Johnson? It wasn't in the Hydra database, as there were no results when Simmons searched for it last episode. Ada seems like the only other person who would know it, but if she knew Skye was really Daisy, why not have her arrested outright? And I think that boils down to Simmons giving herself away when she hijacked a car and did all the things that she did last episode, and Ada is drawing her own conclusions that Skye isn't here with her. So, and she knew that her real name was Daisy. So I do think that's the correct path there. I find it interesting, says Taltos, that even after Simmons begged Ward to spare Fitz's life, no one suggested Ward take out Madame Hydra instead. Oh my gosh, you and Taltos, like you said, are separated at birth, I think, even though she's higher up in Hydra. I wonder if Ada put some type of command in the framework that prevents people from killing her. Yeah, she looked smug rather than concerned when the shooting started. That's true, because Ward is a simulacrum, and maybe he's not able to take out Madame Hydra.
Right. And as we've said before, we don't read the feedbacks.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Ahead of time.
Yeah, that was eerily similar to some of the comments Dave made. But wow, thank you very much for the feedback this week. And we have a lot to discuss in this new pod and definitely have some great Cole Sass moments that will be up this weekend for you to vote on. But that's going to be it for this edition of The Sandbox. Keep up with show news and fan interaction by following us on Twitter at @Shield_GSM. And our popular Facebook group is at facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM, which is also where you can vote on the Cole Sass Report.
And Mike and I will be back next week with our discussion of episode 18 of season 4 entitled No Regrets. And remember, after the episode airs, you can head on over to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback to share your thoughts. Write us a message, record a comment using your computer's microphone, or you can call 304-837-2278.
And while you're there, why not take the time to give us an iTunes review and rating at goldenspiralmedia.com/iTunes to let us know how you've been enjoying our coverage of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
So remember, Team Ward or Team Fitz, it's your call.